Hi, everybody, and hello as we continue. This is Michael Robbins. I guess by now you know who I am, but maybe there's a few new people. I guess for each one of us to know who we are is the main thing. So we're working on the second initiation compilation. We finished program 8. And they are posted on Makara, and I'm not sure yet about YouTube, but I think I think quite soon, if not yet now. So we're on program 9. This is the 19th of June, 2018. So we're talking about, we may remember the Rule 14 for initiates, disciples and initiates, no, express, reveal, destroy, resurrect. And these have different meanings depending on where we start. We can start with the word no at the first initiation, but as well at the third, and then the term express applies very much to the fourth initiation, and on we go until the seventh, where the word resurrect really has a tremendous application, because that is the initiation of resurrection. And it works well too with the fifth initiation, which is the initiation of revelation, no express reveal. And then destroy what? Well, destroy everything that keeps you from treading the way of higher evolution, I suppose. So there are different ways to look at this, either in relation to the five initiations with which we are most familiar, or beginning with the solar initiations and going to the seventh. So we're looking at the deep meaning here of the word express. It's given at the second initiation, so perhaps this will have something to do, well, you know, it can certainly be the second initiation in the solar series, but let's just look at it. The word express, in its deepest meaning, when given at the second initiation, does not mean the necessity to express the nature of the soul, although at the normal second initiation it would be that, to express the nature of the soul through the astral body, and there would be love pouring through the tranquilized astral body. It means, behind all other possible meanings, the command to express the will nature of the monad, and to feel after and embody the purpose which lies behind the plan as a result of the developed sensitivity. This seems to come later in the process, at least in my view. And can we say, can this relate to the second, second solar initiation? That's a question. Can it? So there is a more intimate connection of the consciousness of the initiate with the monad starting at the fourth degree, which is the second solar initiation. Certainly it applies here, because who at the second initiation really knows what is the will of the monad? But at least we have to feel towards it, even at the second degree. We're just becoming somewhat familiar consciously with the nature of the monad at the third degree. So if we're going to express its will nature, embodying the purpose which lies behind the plan, when even at the third degree we only know the plan preliminarily, this has also to apply to the second solar initiation. As you read later on in the book, The Rays and the Initiations, from which this comes, page 315, we do learn that there are ways of reading higher meanings into the ordinarily given words. And so we have to think of the planetary initiation, solar initiation, Sirian series of initiations, and maybe a series of initiations which has to do with our local cosmic logos, in whom our solar logos is a heart center. And to me, this is, in a way, the first of the ones about whom naught may be said. And when we use the term the one about whom naught may be said, I think it's, in a way, the second of these great beings who has constellations for his chakras, in other words, cosmic logoi for his chakras. It's an amazing structure, really. And frankly, we're just scratching the surface of this, even though it seems way, way beyond us, and we're tiny little beings here on this non-sacred planet. There is a future of immense complexity and glory and opportunity all the way to the conclusion of this or any universe. We have to begin to think in these larger terms which dwarf our usual types of thought. So certainly at the second degree, we do begin to express the nature of the soul, especially through the astral body, as love. But now we're expressing also the nature of monadic will as it attempts to bring forward purpose, the purpose behind the plan. That's a very high requirement. Okay, here's another one about the second initiation, talking about the groups associated with the White Lodge and the Black Lodge, or the Black Lodge Lords of Form, the Counterforce, you know, whatever you want to call these brothers. And DK does continually accent the idea that indeed they are brothers, but they've made a certain choice, at least in this solar system. And if they continue on their way, causing deliberate inhibition and destruction of the plan, they will have to repeat a solar systemic period as a monad just starting out. It's a huge delay involving tremendous suffering, I suppose. Both groups of aspirants, you know, either to the right-hand path or the left-hand path, either to the Sirian path of the white initiates or the, Davic path of those who espouse the form, they're all aspirants. They aspire, no matter how high may be their ranking along their particular line, they do aspire to something further. The Lords of Form having a tremendous capacity for the use of the concrete mind beyond anything our imagination can propose, DK is saying. So both groups of aspirants, the black and the white, stand before the door of initiation and take the needed steps to open it. On two similar occasions, remember, these are, what can we call it, initiations of the threshold. And they are probationary initiations. Both overcome the lammer, although the members of the Counterforce of the Black Lodge use it to ensnare others while they themselves are not particularly ensnared. But I can't help but thinking that they are involved in a huge illusion involving their identity, and all this because of the refusal to engage with the second aspect of divinity, the love and wisdom aspect. Both overcome glamour after the second initiation and see their way clearly ahead, because glamour is that which prevents clear sight. a glamour. So let's see here. Okay. Let's see if I can get that. So glamour blocks, which must be obvious, clear vision, but their goals emerge as widely different. One treads the broad way, we might say, where anything they desire is allowed, or they allow themselves anything they desire, which leads ever deeper into matter and materialism and into the clutches of a great material deva from which they cannot separate themselves, so we've been told, into darkness and black power, as it is understood in occultism, of course. The other leads to the straight and narrow way, to the razor-edged path which leads into light and life. We might say, for us, the Syrian mode of initiation rather than the mode, involving a very material devic force. Well, let's see if I can. I don't like it when it underlines that way, especially with words I commonly use. And of course, the amazing thing is that Christ or his equivalent, when did they become? When did they become those who went to the left-hand path? Certainly, the black masters at the moment faced an initiator much earlier in the process. They were initiates in the previous solar system, so we do not implicate the Christ there. But are there those now taking the second initiation and going beyond it, simply making the wrong choices and failing the temptations in the desert, almost deliberately, we might say? Are there thus such who have faced the great Lord, the Christ, who is the Lord of love? It would seem that this must be the case, and then you wonder how it could ever happen that they could be in the presence of the great Lord, let us say, at the second initiation, and still decide on the broad way which leads into matter and materialism, into darkness, and into the power of form, and a very material form at that, within the dense physical body of the planetary logos and solar logos. He calls it here black power. How could that be? Well, there are things about all this that of which we just are not informed. But I am thinking about the opera Parsifal, where, could be a glamorous story, but it's a kind of an intriguing story, where the failed knight Klingsor, with his magical spear, which may have been the spear that was said to bring about the death of Jesus on the cross, he was committed to undermining the progress of the Knights of the Grail, because he himself had failed. And in this quite amazing book, maybe it's just a good glamorous read, I don't know, but it's interesting, by Trevor Ravenscroft, Hitler is associated with Klingsor in an earlier incarnation. So Hitler is what we say a failed knight, who then became a tool in the hands of the superior forces of darkness, and then eventually brought chaos to the world through war and mass murder and all of that kind of thing. So when you're on the path and you fail and you veer off to the left-hand path and even become a master in the Black Lodge, which Hitler was not yet, of course, it can have very severe results. And this is somewhere DK talks about the triumphant work of those in the White Lodge, noticed or existing because so very few tread that dark path and become true members of the Black Lodge, the dedicated enemies of our spiritual hierarchy. So few, due to the work of the White Lodge to prevent it from happening. Well, it's all part of a great planetary, solar systemic, and even cosmic drama, I suppose. And we'll learn more about it soon. However, he advises us that when considering the Black Lodge, speculation about it's not so wise, he says. It's both profitless and dangerous. Anyway, these initiates, probationary initiates, who could go forward through the temptations, instead choose the way of form, the lords of form, to become, if they continue, a lord of form and a member of the counter force. And we'll maybe learn more about those choices as we go along. Okay, now, what are glamours? Something here about electrical energy. And that's something we may have suspected because the fifth ray method of understanding occultism simply has to do with energies and forces in a very technical way. Today, I just have to say I was in a museum, kind of a museum. It was wonderful. It's called Eureka. In Finnish, it means Eureka, and it's a scientific museum. The children were running all over the place. There were so many wonderful films and exhibits, and it was a joyful experience. I didn't know what to expect, but I saw just hundreds of children having the light turned on brighter and brighter. And I just felt, boy, the hierarchies behind this. I felt, you know, the presence of the fifth ray master. I felt the presence of the hierarchy supporting this along the fifth ray, seventh ray line. It was so beautiful. I just couldn't hold my tears back, you know, and even when I think of it right now, all that light, as the hierarchy tries to support the rising of humanity. And all these kids, part of the new generation, just seeing all the many things that can be done as we come closer and closer to mastering the various elemental forces. They're trying very hard, the hierarchy, to lift humanity out of its errors. So, well, that was an experience for me today. The electrical energy of the astral or emotional body next confronts him as he prepares to take the second initiation. Always we have to be equal to what lies behind the door of initiation. We have these kind of, you know, symbols and analogies. But the real explanation is something far more in-depth and scientific, and maybe it takes the fifth ray to really understand it. You can call this energy, if you choose, the sum total of all the glamours. You can call this energy, if you so choose, the sum total of all the glamours. A glamour is essentially a bewildering, deceiving, and illusory energy form which seeks to sidetrack and mislead the neophyte, you know, anybody there before the second initiation, certainly a neophyte, which is attracted to him by ancient habit and old controls. We just don't think about it anymore, but we do things in a certain way that attract to us energies which mislead and bewilder us. He is therefore responsible for the impact of this energy because it's all on the basis of what he's done before and unresolved karma and his habit nature. This type of energy takes form, and the massed forms of these glamours constitute the opposing door, kind of a dweller on the threshold-like door, an aspect of the dweller on the threshold, and oppose the passing of the aspirant onto the next phase of the path. Well, you know, obviously we are learning to use the technique of light in a special meditation that is meant to dissipate these massed forms. These particular energies, at least on this emotional level, are not thought forms. They are drifting, undefined, and exceedingly fluid. When we have thought forms, we have the problem, really, of illusion, misinterpretation, and then we can follow our illusions with desires which make of the illusions glamours. They are drifting, undefined, and exceedingly fluid. Of this type of energy, water is the symbol, and this is one of the reasons, is one reason why this second initiation is called the baptism initiation, or the initiation of entering the stream. Now, we remember and have been discussing the stream as an ashramic current which bears us along. But the stream is clean, and the glamorous waters are not. Glamorous waters are not clean. So the dirty waters are there, and we have definitely to purify this before we can make progress. Really, there are such technical occult steps to be taken, and it's a science what we're doing here, and we cannot afford to treat it in just an aspirational or a mystical way. There are particularities under the fifth ray which have to be fulfilled. These massed forms, the massed forms of these glamours constitute an opposing door which prevent us from passing on to the next possible step. Now, you can only imagine that this is even more true of the dweller on the threshold, which is a combination of myopic forces and glamorous forms and forces and illusory thoughts, which are really, they are forces, more concretized, and that sum total that faces us and which we have generated and perhaps not expiated. We have not dispelled it. We have not dissipated it. We have not dispersed it. This is the very thing that faces us before we can really polarize our consciousness within the causal body all the time and at will. So we have a job to do, and it's better to know about its particular requirements rather than just sort of generally blunder on through. There are, you know, it's like any science. I've been just amazed at what technology, of course, maybe visiting that museum today, but what technology has given us these rockets, these trains, these airplanes, these control of energies and so forth. It's all part of the coming Aquarian age. But with the same kind of care that a scientist working in those fields applies, so we must, in occultism, apply with that kind of exactitude what we know is necessary. There's a the discussion, there was a film today about dark matter, and also the CERN. I'm not sure what CERN stands for, but it's that amazing collider which breaks apart protons or subatomic particles and all kinds of new particles are generated by these collisions, and it is of tremendous length, and the speed in which these collisions take place are tremendous. And I'm thinking about the many, many people that work there along these fifth ray endeavors and how they are really digging into the constitution of matter. It is a great quest, a great scientific quest. I think thousands work there. And they are so motivated, I would say, by the fifth ray ashram, whether it's specifically the fifth ray ashram now or the fifth ray ashram as a part of the third ray ashram, you know, as the suspension of the fifth ray ashram's activities have been lifted, because there did come a time, you know, when that ashram was making too much progress, shall we say. And that progress would have made its discoveries appear prematurely, considering the condition of human consciousness. So, you know, for some 50 years, maybe between 1950 and 2000, its work as an ashram was, as an independent ashram, was suspended, and whatever scientific work went forward did so under the great third ray, in which the fifth ray is included. Now, what technically that means, but I suppose a less intense approach. But when you see what the CERN collider is doing, it's a stupendous work these people have undertaken to get to the bottom of the mysteries of matter, and it looks like people are really searching for the ether, which had been discounted more than 100 years ago, I think, in the Michelson-Morley experiments. No need for the ether. But now I think it will be rediscovered in yet a different way. They still haven't discovered quite the particle of dark matter. Anyway, one day this fifth ray approach will meet the occult approach, and probably there will be those who quietly read occultism on the side and are guided in their fifth ray work by what is suggested by the masters, what they have been able to release. Okay, now we go on. And we, you know, will be overcoming the fragmentary thought forms of illusion and the fluid energy forms of glamour and the impulsive chaotic currents of Maya. We will be learning how to overcome these things. This next one is from Raised Initiations. Again, it's about the building of the Antikorana. So when really can we talk about this process taking place? And he tells us that the initial step towards bringing about, I suppose, the dualism of the triad in relation to the soul-infusing personality, bringing about this dualism is the building of the Antikorana, and this is consciously undertaken only when the disciple is preparing for the second initiation. So think of it then. This work in the Arcane School was approved by Master DK, and in the later degrees we had the Weavers in the Light, and in that Weavers in the Light, the building of the Antikorana was undertaken, so it must be assumed that in some of the higher degrees of the school, there were those who indeed were preparing for the second initiation, otherwise this work would be futile. Well, at least, you know, we're undertaking it consciously now. I suppose there's been a lot of unconscious bridging towards the higher duality in our nature, namely monad triad, and then the lower aspect becomes somehow soul personality, or at least the personality having absorbed aspects of the soul and being infused by it. But it's, let's see if I can, all right, let's see here. So, this is the AAB diagrams, and let's see what we got here. Open? Oh, that's not the one I want, but it's a good one. Chart number 5. What I want is something different. I want, what do I want? Yeah, this is what I want. These. This is maybe the same one, looked at in a different way, and this is chart number 8 is the one I so frequently use. So the higher duality of man we might consider to be monad triad, which is the true triad, is the true ego, maybe the true soul, and the lower part is the personality and causal body. And somehow the Antikarana is bringing these two together. There's nothing really terribly individual about monad triad. I suppose there is a unique history for each one, and it's been a long history, but the real personal part and transpersonal part involves the personality and the content of the causal body. All right. So, where are we now? Here. So, are we preparing for the second initiation? Well, I think the occultists of the world, or occultists in training, have taken that first degree by and large. Not all of DK's students and even accepted disciples had taken the first degree. There was one who had not. All the others had. And so, obviously, their preparation was for the next degree, because for every true disciple, is in training for initiation. Now, many lives may elapse between the first and second degree, but there's another reference which seems to say that it can be taken the next degree within one life or two. So maybe there's a great deal that depends upon our own handling of the time equation. And, you know, if we're really, really serious and we're working on the Antikarana, we realize that that work indicates a certain fitness for the second initiation. The second initiation is largely governed by, well, they're all governed by Capricorn, but Scorpio particularly, and the Antikarana factor, when it starts to enter the triad, is entering the realm of intuition. And that realm of intuition, interestingly, is where the human monads are expressing the Buddhic plane, and it's ruled by Scorpio. And Scorpio brings, in the sequence of initiations, illumination. You know, concentration Leo, meditation Virgo, contemplation Libra, illumination Scorpio, inspiration Sagittarius, and then initiation Capricorn. And we can go on with other names beyond that. Okay, now let's take a look here at Hercules, Buddha, and the Christ. Ah, wow. I'm wondering here what page this is on. It doesn't seem to say. But I imagine we're still in the rays and the initiation. So, eventually, and this, you know, Hercules was a great initiate teacher in Atlantean times. We assume he had the first ray soul, and we also assume he had the first ray monad, but apparently a second ray personality and apparently a fourth ray mind, because of the dramas that he brought forward to teach. Eventually, Hercules came forth and opened the door onto the path of discipleship. This was done in Atlantean times, and there was a period for which this had to prepare, because without this preparation, the kinds of initiations which did emerge in Atlantis could not be taken. Discipleship, or at least probationary discipleship, has to precede the path of initiation. His work being preserved for us in the 12 labors of Hercules. Imagine your work for hierarchy and for humanity being preserved over millions of years in the form of these dramas or plays. He really had a tremendous impact. His real nature has been somewhat caricatured as the strong man, but what he really was the valiant soul, establishing abilities in each one of the 12 signs of the zodiac. He must have done it himself to a degree, because otherwise he wouldn't have been able to write these dramas. So these labors, which I think, you know, we really should study, and it's just such a shame, but maybe predictable, that the Tibetan, through Alice Bailey and her failing health, was only able to actually give us 7 of the dramas as he himself would present them. And then others had to, from Scorpio on, had to present the others, not bad. And then they had to also, they had to explain the dramas, and there's where some of the deficiency comes in, although I think they did try to use some of the earlier lectures of Alice Bailey as explanatory material. Anyway, the quality of the first half of the book, with Alice Bailey writing the descriptions of DK's dramas, that's the best part of the book, and the most accurate and the most inspiring, I think. So these labors epitomize the various tests to which all disciples are subjected prior to the various initiations. Maybe some of them had to do something with initiations, but let's just see, there were certainly tests that led up to the initiations. For instance, the second initiation in Scorpio, quite a battle has to occur with the Hydra, though we're not finished with it, because the Hydra still operates in relation to the third degree, first, second, and third degrees. Then along came Sri Krishna. He, you know, an earlier incarnation of the Christ, whose death supposedly signaled the onset of the Dark Age, the Kali Yuga, in which we are still immersed. Something like 3000 BC, 3001 or 2 BC is a date frequently given. Sri Krishna came and opened the door through which mankind could pass to the second initiation. Now, even on the moonshine, passing to the higher initiations was possible, but it's the mankind of the period, and obviously Sri Krishna, an avatar of love in a way, you know, being the Christ, would open the connection between the love of the soul and the astral body, and, well, maybe even, you know, the Buddhic nature and the astral body, because at the second degree, we can do something with the Antikarana, though usually with respect to the monastic permanent atom and not the Buddhic permanent atom. You know, basically, if you think about the Buddhic permanent atom and the Atmic permanent atom, they're located on such a high level that only those who are beyond the stage of master and even beyond the stage of Chohan can touch the qualities that are found there on the very highest subplanes. You know, I think I pointed it out before, but here is this chart that Keith Bailey brought together, and it shows us that the higher two subplanes of the Buddhic plane and the Atmic plane are not really reachable. And those are where by such as us, but by higher beings, yes, and that's the location of the permanent atoms. Maybe we can get some influence from the triadal permanent atoms, but we're not achieving our point of tension, apparently, on the very highest plane of the Buddhic level or the Atmic level. Those are some of the kinds of things which are not spoken, but which a close study of the charts can reveal. Now, the Buddha is considered a greater figure here than Sri Krishna. Well, you know, the Buddha had a longer period of preparation, being a moonchain monad, and even since the seeds of the first solar system ripened in him, even possibly one who came from the previous solar system. That is not given exactly, but the hint is there. The Buddha, a still greater figure, the one who is known as the Enlightened One, you know, Lord of Light, Lord of Wisdom, also came and demonstrated to humanity the nature of the lighted way. See, we're grateful for our teachers and what they, the legacies they have presented, and those legacies have lasted. I mean, look at the legacy of Hercules. It's immense. Millions of years. The legacy of the Buddha right now, you know, he became, as far as I can see, the head of the hierarchy around the year 3000 or so, at the time of the death of Krishna, who probably, it seems, was passing through the fourth initiation with that death, it seems. So he demonstrated, the Buddha, the Enlightened One, a greater figure, certainly added longer than Sri Krishna the Christ, demonstrated to humanity the nature of the lighted way, its revelations, and its effects in consciousness. He enacted for us the supreme achievements of the mystic way. Now that's interesting, because the Buddha was so terribly rational in a way. If you ever read some of what is written down about what he said, it's just absolute clarity itself. But he did, at a certain point, maybe around, you know, 500 or 600 years before what we call the era of the Christ, he did go through the sixth initiation, and then the Christ, or Sri Krishna, or Lord Maitreya, whatever you want to call him, he took over as the head of the hierarchy about 500 years before he appeared, overshadowing the initiate Jesus in Palestine. So he enacted for us the supreme achievements of the mystic way. Then came the Christ and performed a triple work. Now, this is interesting, because the Buddha actually was surrounded by arhats. So arhats are becoming either initiates of the fourth degree or becoming initiates of the fourth degree. But in general, the Christ opened the door to the third initiation, maybe through his demonstration of what the transfiguration was in the desert before his three disciples. So that was following the desert experience. And we don't know in the desert how much of that was Master Jesus and how much was the Christ, but considering the high nature of the temptations, it probably was, certainly the presence of the Christ was there. We're told that one day the gold and silver threads will be disentangled, and the golden threads are the events in the life of the Christ, and the silver threads are the episodes in the life of the initiate Jesus. You know, we have to think carefully about what these words mean, because certainly Master Kay is not wasting words, and he's not speaking inaccurately. And Alice Bailey was a wonderful exemplar in the use of the English language. Okay, so what else did the Christ do? Here in the Garden of Gethsemane, right? He anchored on earth the will of God in the matrix of love, as it has been esoterically called. So really the union of love and will came under the auspices of the Christ, right? The union of love and will under the auspices of the Christ. And this was later in his career. His career was very short, some 3 years, although we don't know anything, not much, about the preparation in the overshadowing process, maybe the training process, when he might have been working for the with the initiate Jesus before the baptism, when he actually took over the body when he wanted to, and taught as himself within that body. So many of these things we know, approximations, but the actual methods of how these things are done, that will come to us later when we ourselves are members of the spiritual hierarchy or high initiates. He pointed the way through the needle's eye. The needle's eye, which gives entrance to the passage through the pyramid, the symbol of the spiritual triad in this case. The needle's eye is all about the fourth initiation. He wasn't really teaching, he was not teaching his disciples how to take fourth initiation. It would have been quite sufficient for them to take the third, and most of them were at a still earlier stage, but the impulsion towards sacrifice was so great under his influence that no doubt these disciples are now members of the hierarchy. So he pointed the way, it is as hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven as it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. So we have to unload, as it were, and overcome the illusion of extension of time and space so that we become so small that we can fit through the needle's eye. And there's got to be something there about the thread, threading the needle and the antikorana as well, if we continue the analogy. So he pointed the way towards the fourth initiation, even though he himself was taking the sixth in the Garden of Gethsemane and beginning the seventh, which has been lasting these thousands of years, a couple of thousand anyway, and still will continue. So he pointed the way through the needle's eye, which gives entrance to the passage through the pyramid, which leads out onto the way which terminates in Shambhala. Now, is this the way? Sorry. Is this the way of higher evolution? Because to really enter Shambhala, you either have to be a first ray initiate of the fifth degree or an initiate of the sixth degree on other rays. This is how at least I understand it. So not all go to Shambhala, but as monads and while being retained as the initiates who make the great decision, they will work in relation to Shambhala. So at least the sixth initiation is required to come and go in Shambhala. So he pointed. So in a way, he. Let's see, what is this? Okay, consummated nature. So he pointed then the way towards the sixth initiation. Maybe at that time the decision could be made at the fifth, but it seems to me that to come and go in the course of Shambhala, the sixth initiation is required. And he himself was taking the sixth initiation, and with his statement, "Father, not my will, but thine be done," he gave the formula for abiding by the divine will of Sanatkumara, the Father, and entering into the presence of the King in Shambhala. His work was of a major consummating nature, although still not consummated when we think about what's coming up, and when he will be with us not just for 3 years, but we don't know the time of his arrival, but for centuries. He demonstrated in himself two divine aspects, thus giving shape and substance to love. And this had been sequentially fostered by several preceding lesser world saviors, of whom Sri Krishna was the greatest. Now, interesting, the shape. And there are still those who are devotees of Krishna. Do they know that they are devotees of the Lord Maitreya and in Western terms of the Christ? I don't know. Maybe some know that. And notice how the lesser world savior is treated almost as an independent being, even when it was an earlier incarnation here of Lord Maitreya, the Christ. In his name, Lord Maitreya, he's somehow bringing Christianity and Buddhism together. At least we can understand it that way, because the Alice Bailey presentation gives such equal weight almost to both of these traditions. The Buddha is deeply respected and discussed, and the Christ is deeply respected and discussed. So he came to give shape and substance to love, not just as an abstract principle, but we would say love in concrete expression, or let's just say true love in concrete expression. And when we ask, you know, that let us have or be characterized by the mind that is in Christ, it's such a tremendous ask. And can we have that kind of concretization of true love? Can we really express it? Okay, now we continue. Have a little more time here in our approximately 1 hour program. So we're talking about what is the situation of the disciple facing the second initiation. He discovers that he lives in a chaos of emotional reactions and of conditioning clamors. This is the discovery which DK would have had ISGL make about his life immediately before the possibility of the second initiation. But whether ISGL really made that discovery, I don't know. He was such a, in a way, dramatic example of a man just at the border with very intense rays and a very willful man, and also somewhat refusing the advice of the teacher. May we not fall into that situation, although I'm sure that as life has gone on, we've fallen into the rejecting of good advice many times. But now, hopefully, we've grown up and won't do that anymore. So he slowly begins to realize that in order to take the second initiation, he must demonstrate emotional control. We can't have the Agni Suryans running wild. We can't lose our control. We can't lose our tempering, our temper. We can't say things that we will regret later and do things. We have to be guided by the soul infused mind. But of course, we lose our heads. I once had an amazing experience back in college days of losing my head. I got so angry at something someone said to me that I simply reacted and my head was gone. It was, I still remember the moment. I don't remember what was said, but I remember the moment, and I remember the sense of the loss of the head as the guiding principle, and the reactions were directed by other forces altogether. Certain things stand out in our life as teaching moments. Okay, he slowly begins to realize that in order to take the second initiation, he must demonstrate emotional control. which is not the same necessarily as emotional suppression, while the energies are seething beneath the pot, the top of the pot. He realizes also that he must have some knowledge of those spiritual energies which will dissipate glamour. So a lot of glamour dissipating is operative before the second degree. Plus an understanding of the technique whereby illumination from the mind as the transmitting agent of the light of the soul can dispel those glamours and thus clarify the atmosphere in a technical sense. And we're talking here about these are Ray 5 processes involving the Ajna Center. Now, the fifth ray is the ray that is particularly useful, required at the third degree of transfiguration, and Venus is introducing us to the light sublime, you know. But even in the earlier times, Venus has a big role to play at the second initiation, and it is a fifth ray planet, among other things, and it can definitely bring in the light of the mind applied in a loving way. So, you know, seeing our glamours, that's the hard part. You know, we were so used to operating in a certain habitual ways that we simply say, well, that's who I am, that's what I do, and we may be covering up glamorous reactions which keep us from seeing the truth. But let's just say the light of Venus, if I can put it this way, the light of Venus helps us demonstrate this emotional control. So we have to consciously use these astrological qualities, become familiar with them, and wield them, if I might say so. It's a technical process we're involved in here. This is the science of occultism, the science of occultism. And later, when we become intuitively responsive, the art of applying occult principles will be ours. I always think that science precedes art. But you have to do a good job with science before your spontaneous intuitive promptings can really be proper and effective. Otherwise, it's just kind of a undisciplined response to circumstances. So build the science, use the fifth ray to move towards the higher expression of the fourth ray, which is artistic and intuitive. Whoops, okay. Now, probably I'm going to wait on this one. So this will be the end of second initiation compilation, program number 9, and our day here is the 19th of June, 2018, and then beginning of same SIC, right? I wonder, shall I do that? Do I dare do that? Maybe I'll do it, you know. This is not what I want. Sorry to have gotten a little waylaid. So I'm going to say SIC and SIC, and I'm going to put it over here. All right, SIC. And this will be the second initiation. Nope. Compilation. I try to make life a little easier for myself, and sometimes I succeed, and sometimes I do not. Okay. All right. So the beginning of Second Initiation Compilation, and this will be program 10, and when I'll be able to do it, I don't know, but hopefully later this evening somehow. I always hope, but never know. We have another, I don't know, 6 pages in this compilation to go, so maybe a program or two, I'm not sure. And then I have some other references, and then I'll get into the first initiation. Seems to be moving a bit backwards. It is still germane. It is still relevant. There are many people who are aspirants, and they want to learn all about this stuff, but and they study hard periodically, but they haven't taken the first degree, which is a real mark of attainment. It's not something to just be dismissed and say, oh yeah, everyone's taken the first degree. The man who hadn't in DK's group used to run around talking to everybody about Alice Bailey's books, and he financed them, you know, and he was a avid student of them, but something was missing. So even the first degree is a significant attainment. Okay, friends, thank you very much, and we'll be in touch with you soon. Bye-bye.